What do Obama, Biden, and Trump all have in common? They attended private schools chosen by their parents. On average, taxpayers spend $15,424 per student on K-12 public education. The American Federation for Children believes that all families, especially lower-income families, should have the right to use those tax dollars to give their child the best education environment that meets their needs, whether that's a public, private, home, or virtual education. Go to fundmychildnow.com and sign the petition there if you agree.
Welcome back to the Dan Proft Show. We are joined now by Thomas Homan, former acting director of Immigration and Customs Enforcement during the Trump administration and a 30-year veteran of immigration and law enforcement. Tom, thanks for being on the program.
Thanks for having me.
Tom, you've got a piece at the American Conservative that responds to an article by somebody at the American Civil Liberties Union attacking ICE detention centers. And I want to talk about some of the points that you make in this this terrific piece. But before we get to that, I want to talk just a little bit about the centers themselves. What are we talking about here, Tom? Are we talking about detention centers on the southern border where people caught trying to cross illegally are temporarily held? Are we talking about other uses of detention centers? What exactly are these?
Well, look, we got a series of detention centers built around the country. Many of them are located, of course, near the southwest border, but we have detention centers all across the country because ICE not only detains those who cross the border illegally that are arrested by the Border Patrol, we also detain those who are arrested by local police for crimes, and they get released from the jails. We have detention centers near some of the biggest cities across the country. They're a place where we hold people until they can see an immigration judge and have their case heard. Of course, they're in the country legally, so you know, they're obviously a flight risk, which requires us to detain them. And, you know, and we all know they're a flight risk. That's why there's, you know, well over 12 million illegal aliens in this country right now. I think it's closer to 20 million. So, and they're built for the sole purpose of civil detention. So, you know, as long as I've, you know, been involved with ICE, I constantly hear from the far left that these detention centers are poorly managed and the medical programs are very bad, but it's simply not true. It's not factual at all. A lot of money spent on building, maintaining these facilities and providing health care and all kinds of benefits to those that we detain until a judge makes a determination.
And I assume there's a pretty wide range, but I mean, how long are we typically talking about? How long might the average...
The average length of detention will run you between 30 and 40 days, depending on the case. Now, you got your outliers. If someone's detained, they appeal to the appellate court of the immigration court, then the attorneys can certainly appeal to the local district court, then they can appeal to the federal appellate court, and there's been cases appealed all the way up to the Supreme Court. So detention can last several years if they want to keep fighting their case and keep appealing the decisions. But the average length of detention is anywhere between 30 and 40 days for your regular case.
And during the Trump administration, we heard just hysterical commentary on the idea of children being separated from their parents. We heard this for months. Is that what we're talking about here? Are these detention centers where that would this be the place where that takes place?
No, the detention center. We detain several populations, right? So we detain adult males and adult females. And if we detain a child, it has to be with a parent. So we do have about 3,000 family residential center beds. And these are, again, soft-sided facilities. You're not talking about razor wire or concertina wire and the stuff you see in regular jails. These are a campus-type setting, a dorm-type setting, where we detain families together. ICE is not legally able to detain a child. As per the Homeland Security Act of 2002, the Tracking Victims Act of 2008, Border Patrol or ICE can only hold on to a child for less than 72 hours and we're required to turn them over to HHS. So the way it works on the border, if the Border Patrol arrests a child, you know, like the unaccompanied alien children are steadily increasing as we speak. As they come across and are apprehended by the Border Patrol, they are quickly turned over to Health and Human Services and put it in the possession of Office of Refugee Resettlement. And they put them in licensed daycare facilities throughout the country until they, again, hear their immigration case or find a relative or sponsor and take care of the child while that case is proceeding through court.
Now, let's go to your piece at the American Conservative. You're responding here to an article that was written by somebody from the ACLU attacking these ICE detention centers as inhumane and so forth. And how do you respond to those claims?
It's a false narrative. You know, these same people that want open borders. You know, ACLU has been fighting immigration enforcement for decades. They fight law enforcement generally. But, you know, I've been there and I've seen them constructed. I've been to many of the facilities myself in my three decades of almost 35 years enforcing immigration law. These are some of the finest detention facilities constructed. And the detention standards alone, the standards of detention, we call them, are the highest in the industry. There is no state or federal facility or county facility that has the height of detention standards that ICE does. It's called PBNDS-11, Performance-Based Detention Standards, that were created in 2011 with the help of many non-government organizations and accreditation agencies and penal accreditation agencies, where all sorts of people came to the table and came up with these standards that, frankly, if the taxpayers knew what those standards were, they may be upset how much they are paying for. They're so high. Let's put it this way. When I was the ICE director, I had numerous sheriffs, either because we have our detention facilities that we own. We have detention facilities that we contract out. But there's not enough beds, not enough facilities. We do contract with some county jails to hold someone temporarily. And a lot of jails would end their contract with ICE or refuse to enter into contract with ICE because the sheriff said, I don't give these type of standards to U.S. citizens. So why would I give this to somebody who's in the country illegally? And there's no way you can pay me enough to do this because it's going to cost a lot of money to have extra nurses. It's going to cost extra money to have this size recreation or have a law library or all these other things that we require. So the detention standards are the highest in the industry. And no one can argue that. If anybody can go on the ICE website and look at the detention standards, look at PBNDS-11, the detention standards that were created in 2000, and read them for yourselves. They compare that to detention standards in any jail across this country. Our stand head and shoulders above any of them.
We've got just about a minute and a half left here, Tom, in this segment. One of the things that the ACLU guy attacked the ICE centers for is that some of them are operated by a private company or by one or more private companies for profit, as he put it. Comment on that, if you would.
Businesses are in the business of making money. And so, yes, these companies make a profit or they wouldn't be doing it. But look, the private detention facility, I can tell you right now, the most expensive beds that ICE has are the ones the federal government own. And there's not many more because of the cost. We got rid of most of them. I think we got five facilities left. But it doesn't say that they're doing anything wrong. I mean, you know, bus companies make money, airline companies make money, and they do government business too. So it's relying on the non-government system to provide services for the government is a necessity. We couldn't complete our mission without some of these big companies that do things big. They do it smart. They do it cheap. We couldn't survive without them.
Tom Homan, we are up against a hard break here. We will be back with more with Tom Homan after these messages.
Exposing political fakers, fixers, and takers. He's Dan Proft, and this is The Dan Proft Show.
Welcome back to The Dan Proft Show. We are talking with Tom Homan, former acting director of Immigration and Customs enforcement in the Trump administration. We've been talking about the detention facilities that the federal government operates, contracts with private companies to operate, and the high level of quality, the high level of care at these facilities. Tom, I want to talk about that at a kind of a broader level for a couple of minutes here. So a lot of these people, particularly that are being held at the southern detention facilities, I assume simply got caught illegally crossing the border. Is that right?
Yes.
Why is it that we have to go to such extraordinary lengths to house these people, to give them medical care, to to support them for what could be months? Why is that required? Why can't we simply?
Well, there's a couple of things you need to consider. First of all, what the ACLU said in their report, of course, they told half truths. Was first of all, about 70 to 72% of everybody we detain are being detained because they're congressionally mandated to be detained. Federal statute said they must be detained because they're expedited removal cases or caught crossing the country, border illegally. The Border Patrol agent processed them for expedited removal, which means we got to detain them because they're a flight risk. Anybody doesn't think that someone just crossed the border illegally isn't a flight risk. They're just sorely, wrong. 95% of everybody ICE deports from this country, they deport from a bed. 5% of total people that we deport from a non-detention setting. Why? Because once they get released, they're in the wind. And that's why we have close to 20 million illegal aliens in the country now. We have well over 1.6 million illegal aliens in this country who had due process. They were ordered removed by a federal judge and didn't leave. And reason the fugitives because they weren't detained. These are, ICE only detains a small percentage of everybody across the border. ICE has, right now they're funded for 35,000 beds, but they have over 400,000 people come through the system. So less than 10% of those who are coming to the country are detained. So those that are released, they either do not show up in court, or if they do show up in court, get order removal, they don't leave. So it's a necessity that we detain these folks so they can have a due process. There's only one way you can guarantee they get due process is to detain them for 30 to 40 days. If you release them, let me add this point. If you're released, we call it the non-detain docket, your case is put on a shelf because the immigration courts are going to prioritize those that are being detained for obvious reasons. They're in a detention setting. We'll hear those cases first. So their hearings will be held within 30 to 40 days. If you get released, your case takes to 5 to 7 years. And what's the downside on that? Because in 5 to 7 years, they'll have several U.S. citizen children because you give birth to, even though you're here illegally, you give birth to a child here or parent a child here, that child's a U.S. citizen. Now, 5 or 6 years later, when ICE finds that person's been ordered removed finally, now the media goes crazy, left goes crazy. Why did you arrest and deport this guy that has 3 USC children? Well, because he chose to have those children, knowing that he was in immigration proceedings. He chose that route because he thinks that's his, ticket for to stay in the country. And that's just a stone cold fact. Matter of fact, when all these families came across the last couple of years, and I did an operation to go look at the families that have been ordered removed by a judge, 30% of those families, the female is either pregnant or already had a U.S. citizen child. So handling these cases faster is easier for everybody, including the families of the person going through proceedings, because then you put them in a difficult position. You have U.S. citizen children, but the parents been ordered removed by a federal court. So let's get it done quickly. They'll have the due process quickly. It's a better system.
Tom, we've got just a little over a minute left in this segment. I guess what my question, Tom, is why can't we just march them back across the border? Why do we have to house them, give them a hearing, et cetera? Why not just send them right back across the border if we catch them?
Many we send back across the border for expedited removal, but many what they found out, if they come to this country and claim asylum, then we can't immediately remove them. They have to have a whole new process. And that's what's happened the last several years. They found a loophole in the system. They go to the border, they say a few key phrases that the cartels teach them and claim asylum, and we can't remove them unless they have their asylum process. And it could take years. That's the problem. And as I said, through 100, 200, 300 interviews, Congress needs to change the system and not make it so easy to exploit and commit fraud. Because the fact of the matter is, 90%, it's actually 89.4%, so 9 out of 10 of every Central American that comes to our border and claims asylum, never gets relief from U.S. courts because they either don't qualify or they don't show up in court. So knowing that that's a real data facing you, knowing that 9 out of 10 commit a fraudulent claim to asylum, why wouldn't Congress fix the system so it's not so easy?
Tom Homan, thank you so much for being with us. This is really interesting stuff, and I think you've shed a lot of light on something a lot of people don't really understand that well. So thanks very much for being on the Dan Prof Show. We will be back with more after this.
Listen, the more you'll know. This is the Dan Proft Show.